Here's the answer to your decorating problem. The revolutionary new Jewel Colorizer paints with 1,322 colors in all finishes and sizes. Save time and money and create new beauty in your home with Jewel Colorizer paints.
Make your first step in redecorating a stop for the Bacon and Van Buster Glass Company, where you'll find Jewel Colorizer paints. The Bacon and Van Buster Glass Company at 719 South Neal in Champaign. Remember, the Bacon and Van Buster Glass Company has the new Jewel Colorizer paints. The correct Central Standard Time in 30 seconds, 8 p.m. Here's the weather outlook for Champaign-Urbana and area. Occasional rain tonight and tomorrow. Rain ending tomorrow. Cooler. Low this evening, 52. High tomorrow, 58. The present temperature at the WDWS Radio Center is now 54 degrees. Stay tuned now for Hear It Now with CBS News Chief Edward R. Murrow. The correct Central Standard Time, 8 p.m.
Now, Edward R. Murrow and the voices of General Dwight D. Eisenhower, Senator Robert Taft, Walter Reuther, Charles E. Wilson, Rita Hayworth, and more than 40 other voices in the news. Plus, opening night at the circus and the people of Milwaukee in the 17th performance of Hear It Now, presented tonight and every week at this time.
This winning of the little battle in Korea had better not lull the American people to sleep, because I think that we stand in the face of terrible danger and maybe the beginning of World War III.
So many programs, all about the circus, Ringling Brothers, Barnum Bailey's program.
Don't forget your peanuts.
So many programs, all about the circus.
And we say to the boys in Wall Street, the free labor movement has forgotten more about the practical fight against communism than the Wall Street boys will ever know.
Hear It Now. The Columbia Broadcasting System and 173 affiliated radio stations present a document for ear based on the week's news and the men and women who made it. All the voices and sounds you will hear are real and are presented as they were recorded in the heat and confusion of a world in crisis. Here is the editor of Hear It Now, the distinguished reporter and news analyst, Edward R. Murrow.
The spring rains are still falling in Korea and turning the hard earth of the winter into soft, bad fighting ground. But the 8th Army in force was pushing bridgeheads across that political moat which is called the 38th parallel. It was the week of our 58,000th casualty, and it was also the first week in more than a month in which the Korean story was able to compete with the crime hearings and the RFC hearings in a news civilization in which a Costello would seem to be better copy than a Ridgway. Fortunately for the nation's morale, there was no report from the front as to what the troops along the 38th thought of current developments on the home front.
Actually, we are now contending with three North Korean divisions, or a total of from 15 to 20,000 enemy that will be cut off by our planned operation tomorrow morning.
The voice you just heard is that of Captain Ted Timberlake of the 187 Regimental Combat Team as he briefed his men prior to a recent jump behind the enemy lines in Korea. While the statesmen were debating the advisability and legality of crossing the 38th, there were tactical decisions which had to be made to secure the safety of our troops along the parallel. This unit, some 3,300 strong, went into an enemy area of over 15,000 Chinese. Overwhelming odds. Listen to Larry Kane of Waltham, Massachusetts.
So there are 15,000. Well, there was that one, the first platoon of Easy Company who took that hill last month with 41 men. That 41 against 900 is roughly 18 to 1. Tomorrow we only face somewhere between 4 and 5 to 1. That sort of puts the odds in our favor.
That was just before the takeoff of a parachute drop. Now you're about to hear one of the rarest recordings ever made in combat. Your ear will be tuned to a microphone strapped to the chest of Robert Lesher, a combat reporter for the Voice of America, as he stood in line with the paratroopers in a flying boxcar, as he moved up to his position by the jumpmaster and out into space. Listen.
There goes the crew member back to open the rear doors. Now a great glow of light flashes in here as these doors are open, gaping to the bright sunny air in the back. Red signal. The jump master's coming back on my side. Trick master checking the equipment, going from one to the other. We're now waiting for our green signal. Everybody okay? They're shouting, everybody okay. They all have a hold of their static cords. We all have our static cords attached onto the cable. In about a half a minute, we'll get our green signal.
I just wish it were over. That's my one wish now that it were over. Where it's a matter of seconds before we'll be in the air.
So we're moving forward, one right after another. Here we go. Jeff is pushing on ahead of me. We're pushing ahead. We're going to go right out, one right after another. Left foot first. Left foot first. Let's just go.
My chute open. I'm open. Thank God it's open. I'm floating in midair. I hope you can hear me. We have orders to look up, to see that our chutes are all right. There was a terrific wrench. The shadows over the rice paddies below were waving side by side to side. Great black discs. As we get closer, they get larger. All these green chutes, a few of them white, drifting down in a gentle breeze that's now spinning me backward, forward, backward, forward. Now I must reach up. Reach up and pull my risers. It's a terrific jolt. Not too painful.
I don't know whether my equipment is still working, whether or not you can hear me.
General Matt Ridgway, an old parachute hand himself who dropped in Normandy, isn't allowed to jump with his new command, but expects his generals to jump with the troops. Here is Brigadier General Frank S. Bowen, just after a recent jump, briefing the correspondents at his headquarters. The enemy is still on four sides of them, and the general's query to the newsmen, are there any more questions, would almost appear to be some kind of a cue for the Chinese.
Our casualties, considering the operation and the area, were minimum. Jump casualties were light, and casualties from enemy actions were likewise light. Anybody, any other questions that they'd like to ask?
That was close.
Yeah. They've got it spotted on their map.
Yes, they have.
It sounded like an airburst, that one back there.
No, that was a ground burst.
Anybody, anything else?
The Korean War is now in its 10th month. In certain areas, it is becoming almost a permanent installation, with movie theaters, PXs, rest camps, delousing centers, and even radio stations. But up front, the relaxation is always scant, and most of the entertainment self-styled.
Well, what a time,
my Lord.
Now, what a time,
my Lord.
Now, what a time,
great God Almighty.
Now, what a time, what a time.
The music you hear comes from beside a 155-millimeter gun, as some of the boys of a Negro field artillery outfit attached to the Koreans put their gripes and homesickness to music.
Bombs and things are jamming. I really do have my family time. And by the way, so we can whip all in love. Wake up, hope, and buy a barn. A help to the boys across the pond. A mother going down on bending knees. The sun going down in dreadful seas. 1941. The Second World War had just begun.
The news from Korea was a combination of optimism on the tactical front, where our gains were good, and serious overtones of ominous developments on the strategic front. There was constant talk of a major communist counteroffensive aimed at our widening front. There was also talk that Russia itself, for 10 months now a chief protagonist in the Korean War, without committing a single company to combat, might be on the verge of using its own troops. Yesterday, Representative Joe Martin read a letter he'd received from General MacArthur. The general wants to use Chinese nationalist troops to open a second front in Asia. Says we're fighting Europe's war in Asia with weapons, while diplomats in Europe are fighting it with words. The general thinks politicians are interfering with the conduct of the war. On Wednesday afternoon, Speaker Rayburn of the House, a usually cautious man, seldom given to alarm, asked for the floor and gave this grim warning to his colleagues.
With 30 enemy planes coming over Korea,
with the massing of troops in Korea and Manchuria, and not of all of them Chinese communists by a great extent, I say to this House in all earnestness and in all seriousness that it is my firm belief that we're in greater danger of an expanded war today than we have been at any time since the close of World War in 1945. This complacency, this winning of a little battle in Korea, had better not lull the American people to sleep, because I think that we stand in the face of terrible danger and maybe the beginning of World War III.
The next day, the president refused to comment on Speaker Rayburn's statement, merely said he was a truthful man. Opposition spokesmen accused Rayburn of whipping up an artificial crisis to drive the draft bill through Congress. On the floor of the Senate, where the initiative for the past few weeks had also yielded to the hearings, seats were again filled and records bulging as the great debate on troops to Europe reached its climax. But it was a week of speeches, amendments, debates, resolutions, and votes which taxed the flexible democratic system of this republic. On Saturday, in a speech in Indiana, Senator Robert Taft, the Republican leader, said this.
We face today and this Monday a vote on the basic question as to whether or not Congress is to surrender to the president all power over foreign affairs. The President Truman has made claims for authority in the foreign field beyond anything that any president has ever made, even beyond those made by Franklin D. Roosevelt. Roosevelt wrote distinctly to the Premier of France in 1940 that he could not furnish military assistance without the approval of Congress.
What the administration's foes in the Senate wanted was a clear-cut understanding that troops cannot be dispatched to foreign lands without the consent and approval of the Senate. If the chief executive could not legally be prevented from acting, his opposition in the Senate wanted it known that they wished to be consulted. The resolution to limit troops to Europe, to the two divisions already there and four more to go, was offered by a Democrat, Senator John McClelland of Arkansas.
Mr. President, I offer an amendment to the pending resolution. The amendment, Mr. President, reads as follows. Quote, but it is the sense of the Senate that no ground troops, in addition to such four divisions, should be sent to Western Europe in implementation of Article 3 of the North Atlantic Treaty without further congressional approval.
It was a strange vote. A Democrat offered the resolution, and a Republican, Senator Henry Cabot Lodge of Massachusetts, vigorously opposed it.
Mr. President, to my mind, the McClellan Amendment endangers the security of our troops abroad. It endangers the security of the whole country. It tends to diminish the influence and power of the Senate. The McClellan Amendment is particularly dangerous because it will make many persons wonder whether, after all, our system of government, which has lasted so many years, can meet the challenge of modern times, the challenge of this undeclared war, or whether it has been made so rigid by artificial legalistic interpretations that it is becoming a millstone around our necks.
Senator Herbert Lehman, Democrat of New York, was also opposed to limiting the president's power.
I feel that the action taken by the Senate in adopting the amendment of the senator from Arkansas, Mr. McClellan, is dangerous, and that it will tie the hands not only of the executive, but also of our responsible military authorities. I believe that to compel the president to obtain the approval of the Senate will not only cause embarrassment, but may very seriously affect the security of our nation and tragically jeopardize the survival of the other free nations of the world.
Senator John Brecker of Ohio said this.
There is a loss of confidence in the President of the United States because of his past actions. The people do not want to have their Congress abandon its responsibility, abdicate its duty, and turn that responsibility over to the President of the United States alone.
And Senator Russell Long of Louisiana was one of the few Southern senators who supported the administration.
Mr. President, I certainly hope that this amendment will not be adopted. It seems to me that what we have had going on for the past 3 months on the floor of the Senate is the best argument against the amendment. If it should happen that more troops were needed in Europe, the president should have the authority to go ahead and send additional troops without having to come to Congress and to wait the result of a Gallup poll while we spend 3 months in debate so as to give every senator an opportunity to be heard in detail and to make five or six speeches on the subject. At some time, decisions must be made. We have been fortunate that the communists have not moved while this so-called great debate of 3 months has been taking place.
On Wednesday, the Senate voted, 69-21, to ask the president to seek the approval and consent of the Senate before sending more troops abroad. All this after 3 months and millions of words. Neither side is satisfied, but both claim victory. Kenneth Wherry, the Republican whip in the Senate, whose original resolution had been superseded by a dozen others, claimed a great victory for his side.